roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Goz. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goz, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Let's get it on.
What is up, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George reporting for duty here on a Thursday. Glad to be with you. It's going to be fun for the next hour. Actually, no guests today, so we get to cover a lot of stuff. We have some making up to do from last Saturday's card with Max Holloway and Calvin Kattar. You all already know the results, but you know how we like to just kind of put a bow on each event. We'll do that. And we had an event last night. Well, it was nighttime in Abu Dhabi, but it was an early morning affair here on the West Coast, the Pacific time zone. So we'll go over the Chiesa and Neil Magny card. And then, of course, we got a preview, UFC 257, which takes place on Saturday, the big pay-per-view to start off the year. Conor McGregor and Dustin Poirier in that main event. Wish I could tell you it was for a title, but it's not. So we'll go over that. We'll go over some of the latest news, of course. I may have to stun gun my general manager at USA Sports. And, of course, I think we should give our predictions for the big weekend of football. We're down to four teams. And after this week, we will know who plays in the Super Bowl for this year's NFL season. So lots to discuss here. It's MMA Junkie Radio on a Thursday, January 21st.
Hola amigos, Danny Segura dropping in. Just wanted to let you know about MMA Junkie's latest podcast. It's Hablemos MMA, a weekly Spanish language show dedicated to all things professional fighting. Each Monday, we recap the major events from the weekend, plus we analyze the week's biggest news. We also bring you exclusive interviews with the best fighters, coaches, and experts in the Hispanic and Latin American scene. You can find Hablemos MMA every Monday morning on your favorite podcasting platform. Suscríbete y nos hablamos pronto. Chao.
Before we get into this whole MMA thing, I get a text from our big boss, Chris is his name. I'm not going to tell you his last name, but he's the head honcho. And every once in a while, we'll exchange a text because we all love football tremendously. I mean, he obviously hires us to be a part of the MMA team, but he oversees a whole operation. And he used to play football. So his team, the Buffalo Bills, are in the playoffs. So, yeah, you know, we've kind of been rooting for his team, I guess, a little since our teams are out. But today I get a text, and it's a, I guess, a meme they call it or a pic, I don't know. And I just pulled out of getting my hair did. Looking pretty good, right, Goz?
Yeah.
The little hair I got. And here's what I read today. It was the following.
You want me to read it? I have it in front of me.
It says, it's a picture of Patrick Mahomes. It's got him in action, number 15, Chiefs. I wouldn't even know what his number is, honestly. So it's not like it was like number 00 or 99. Like, it just looked like a quarterback number, him in action. I looked at it real quick because when I got out of getting my hair cut, I had five texts. And it says, quote, "Oh, I'm feeling great. I just hope Lamar passes his concussion protocol so we can have another competitive game against the Ravens on Sunday. Patrick Mahomes at practice today." So I read it and I giggled. I'm not trying to laugh at somebody's brain trauma or anything, but the fact remains is that Patrick Mahomes had a concussion this past weekend against the Cleveland Browns. They hung on, good thanks to Chad Henne, their backup quarterback. And so they're in the finals of the AFC, the conference championship against Chris's Buffalo Bills. So when he sent that to me, I just thought, oh, wow, did he really say that? He writes me back, come on, GG. Now, he's a nice guy, so to get that out of him, you know that's the equivalent of, like, one of our friends saying, the fuck is wrong with you? Or what are you thinking? Are you fool? You know what I mean? He obviously has to hold back because he has a position of, you know, within the company. But that little come on, GG, I read it. I was like, what? I don't think I was that aligned. And, of course, goes, piles on. He's Chris's buddy. So it's two against one. I know I'm driving, so I know I don't have a chance for the comeback, right, until I get my place of destination. I brought Bad Goes a nice, tasty breakfast, by the way. And I was like, well, you know, I don't know. I thought really he may have had a practice, and maybe these concussion symptoms just came back, and the announcer just said, you ready for Sunday? He said that, and then everybody in the room did a whole want to get away, like, this is a serious deal. So I thought this was within the realm of possibility. These two dismissed me like I was a Martian. Goes, defend you and Chris.
I mean, I just, when I read it, I laughed. I thought it was pretty obvious. It didn't look like a normal quote that would come out of a, I mean, when I read it, I just thought that's a joke. That's funny. And I started laughing. But if I had to analyze it, it doesn't look like a regular quote. Like, it's not even in quotations. It's branded Savage Sports on the top right-hand corner. And then the quote.
Well, I couldn't see that.
The bottom of the quote just says Patrick Mahomes at practice today. Like, you don't normally see those types of things. So, I mean, I guess if you have to dive into it, there's more evidence into it. But right away, I just laughed because it's like, you could tell. Not only that, you know, he's a Buffalo Bills fan. So you kind of see that he's coming from.
Is this within the realm of possibility, though? That he could have said something like this.
Probably not. I mean,
think about those MMA fighters when they're like, hey, let's go over the winning sequence. You knocked them out. Take us through this. And they're like, I don't even remember the fight. You know, like there's a lot of people that actually lose that short-term memory for a moment, you know. And if he just finished practice, maybe not that he took a hit, but maybe just, I don't know. But I felt so humiliated for that one moment. And what are you going to do? Tell the big boss? You know, you can't fire back. You just have to go, okay, you know, you take it. But I was like, Goes was right next to him, you know, toasting with him. So I got to discuss this on today's show.
I didn't tell what I toast about. Oh, my joke?
Are you going to be your co-host? Because I need to go to in the concussion protocol because I'm so off of my wheels.
I mean, you're pretty off on your wheels because, I mean, just think about it. The guy just practiced, right? So practice had everything to do with preparing for the Buffalo Bills. You know, every play that's being called, every look they're giving him. He's probably hearing Buffalo Bills over and over. So for him to go right after practice and then say, we're getting ready for them, he'd have to be really jacked up, which I don't think they would have even let him practice and then let alone get in front of camera. So, I mean, I don't know. It just seems really far out there.
I guess by the time you guys said it was a joke, I was like, all right, it was a joke. I didn't see the Savage Sports thing, but I don't know. I just felt like I got laughed out of the locker room there for a second. I'm not used to that. I'm usually the one instigating, but whatever. I guess it's done. That said, I do want to say that better be the only one, Chris, because you need me. I'm the one that's been pushing Goes to make his rally stakes. I'm the one that's gotten your Buffalo Bills to 2-0 in these playoffs. So guess what? I don't know if that Goes is that fired up about clogging our arteries and having yet another ribeye this weekend, but I may be able to talk him into it as long as the ball busting ceases as of this moment.
I thought I had a pretty funny joke this week, and it got one LOL, and it was from the same guy. But somebody on my Facebook page wrote that, has anybody been to Legoland? I've been considering going and I want to take the family, blah, 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 right? So a couple people said, oh, it's dirty, or it's this part of it's cool. It's not kept up. So I wrote, I tried to get in once, but I got blocked off, which I thought was funny. And I followed it up with, it's always been a dream of mine to go. People tell me to give up, but I just can't let go. And this guy... Huh?
Nobody laughed?
Yeah, well, a couple people laughed, but the person that wrote the thread looked at me like I was some kind of jerk or savage or I don't know. That ain't that bad, right?
Yeah, that's harmless fun there. I would have giggled at that.
Yeah, if I told that joke in person, I would have done something like this afterwards. A little gig, you know, a little dance or something. That's just a harmless little joke. But man, people take themselves so serious on social media.
This is true. All right. Well, listen, let's talk about some MMA. First, let's put these other events to bed. I'm going to go through them really fast. because on Monday we didn't really talk much. We had two guests, and we didn't really finish out the details from Holloway versus Cater. We discussed that fight, and I believe we discussed Condit and Brown. Li Jingliang defeated Santiago Ponzinibbio. Ponzinibbio hadn't even fought in 2 years. He got iced in the first round. He has a 7-fight win streak, but I think he can come back from that. That's a competitive division, though, the welterweights. So he's got some catching up to do after he recovers from that KO. Alessio De Chicario knocked out Joaquin Buckley, who produced last year's knockout of the year. So that was a head kick finish in round one. We had another first round stoppage when Puna Soriano dusted off Dusko Todorovic. Somebody's O had to go. Puna's didn't. So he's still undefeated. Jocelyn Edwards defeated Wu Yanan. Carlos Felipe defeated Justin Taffa. Those guys went at it. Split decision there. Ramazan Emiev defeated David Zawada. Vanessa Mello, hello, defeated Sarah Morass. Austin Lingo defeated Jacob Kilburn. The bonuses went to Holloway and Cater, 50 grand apiece for the fight of the night. Li Jingliang defeated, and Alessio De Chirico got performance of the nights for those KOs. I was making the case for Puna. I felt like he could have had been considered, because Puna defeated an undefeated fighter, knocked him out, and he was surgical because he hurt him early, then backed off, hurt him again, then backed off. So rather than going in there and doing anything foolish, he slowly chopped down the tree until he got a beautiful finish, in my opinion. So I thought – I didn't want to take anything away from De Chirico, but Joaquin Buckley, minus that KO, less than a year ago, I think 6 months ago, Holland took him out too. You know, it's not like, oh, my God, somebody knocked out Buckley. He's been knocked down before, and whereas Todorovic hadn't even lost before. So that might be me homering because I'm an extreme couture guy, but I still thought that was the bigger win.
I'm going to co-sign with you, but I will say this. I feel like the blueprint on bonuses has just been out. And if you're not vocal and if your name just isn't big, you're going to have to do something tremendous to get a bonus. It seems like, and when we get to the next card, we'll probably be back to talking about the same thing, because I thought somebody got shafted there as well. It's something that Dan Tom, our former co-host and colleague here at MMA Junkie, talks about a lot. And it's just starting to become more of a normal thing, I think, where we just sit here and we go, how come this guy, how come we did? But the recipe always seems to be the same. And I think that kind of sucks a little bit.
This would have been the perfect event for them to go, we're not going to do four $50,000 bonuses. We're going to do five $40,000 bonuses. Now, four guys would feel like, oh, man, I just lost 10 grand. But again, that's better than one of you possibly have been being the guy that got left out. Max Holloway would probably have the biggest beef. But I'd tell him, fool, you get paid well and you just got a title shot. You're a guy that lost to the champ twice, but we're going to put you in that title shot. You perform well. You'll make it up. Don't worry about it. I would tell Cater, man, you got dominated. You're just part of the fight of the night, but it really wasn't the best, performance from your end. You said it yourself. So just be happy with the 40. And then those other three guys, just be lucky that you're not the guy that got left out. So I really think that there should be those nights when there's five, give them each 40 grand. Or I guess if Dana's really going to take out that checkbook and write a check, we don't know about it, then I guess we can all live with that. But I don't know. I just thought Puna's was more impressive.
Yeah, I mean, it was a good one. But like I said, I just think that recipe's out there, and it really does suck. And I think the matchmakers themselves, too, weigh in on this, right, with Dana, don't they? I'm pretty sure they have an opinion. And I feel like sometimes maybe matchmakers tend to have their favorites as well.
What if you went to one of the matchmakers and they said, I don't even have an opinion?
Then I would probably say, I'd probably laugh. I mean, if you hit me with that, what else am I going to say? Hey, quit being dumb. I mean, you gotta have some kind of opinion.
No. I was teeing you up on that line from Pulp Fiction. You got to have an opinion. And then I think he blows his head off. Uh-huh. Remember Marvin? He goes, man, you haven't even got an opinion. He's sitting in the back. I think those were his final words. Marvin, what do you think? And he goes, man, I don't even got an opinion. John Travolta turns around. He's got the gun in his hand. He goes, you got to have an opinion. Boom. One of the funniest scenes goes, I laughed so hard in the movie theater that day. I think I was getting nudged. I was getting shushed because I just kept laughing and laughing my ass off. But anyway, that was 1995, almost 25 years ago. Continuing on, yesterday's card, Michael Chiesa dominated Neil Magny 49-46 across the board over five rounds. That means he won four rounds and lost one. Warley Alves dispatched of Munir Laziz. Isaac Villanueva defeated Vinicius Moreira. Vivian Araujo defeated Roxanne Mortaferri. Matt Schnell defeated Tyson Nam. Close one there. That was a split decision. I lost money, got to be honest. Lerone Murphy defeated Douglas Silva de Andrade. Omari Akhmedov defeated Tom Breeze. Ricky Simon defeated Gaetano Perello. Su Mujari defeated Zaruk Adishev. Dalcha Longimbula defeated Marcus Perez. Francisco Figueiredo defeated Jerome Rivera. Mike Davis defeated Mason Jones. Umar Nurmagomedov defeated Sergey Morozov, and Manon Fiorot defeated Victoria Leonardo. Two things. That Fiorot lady, it looks ferocious. They got themselves a flyweight, man. She went after Victoria Leonardo, and Umar Nurmagomedov looks just as good as his cousin. His cousin, Habib, turned out to be his translator. It was a pretty funny moment there. So everybody knows Habib's out in Fight Island. He was there for his cousin, but he served as the translator. And what was funny and ironic about what he had to translate was the fact that his cousin said, I just did what he did 10 years ago, except it took me one less round and everybody had a good giggle.
Hey, I didn't know Derek spoke French. Did you notice he was the translator for the flyweight girl?
Get out. Really?
Yeah. When they brought her in, I thought first thing I said was, doesn't she speak French? And Derek was just standing there and I was thinking, like, did they screw up? Did they tell him she's from Brazil or something, you know? And then sure enough, he started speaking French to her.
Bro, let me tell you something. I'm impressed by that because Derek is great. His Brazilian Portuguese is awesome. He speaks great English. And if he knows French too, my hat's off. Have you ever seen Paul Pogba do media goes?
Yeah, yesterday.
Yeah, but I guess in a bigger setting. I saw him do a scrum after the World Cup, and he was asked by the Italian press, and they asked him something in Italian, and he answered. And I thought, well, that makes sense. He played in Italy, you know, for Juventus for 4 years. Then, of course, he did most of his talking in French. Makes sense. He was, I believe, the team captain for France who won the World Cup. They asked him questions in English, and he was going from one to the other without so much as a glitch. But that made sense, too, because he came up through the Manchester United system. So, of course, he knows English. He's got the French accent, but it's not bad. It's not like Patrice Evra's, for example. And then they asked him in Spanish, goes, he might speak Spanish better than us. And, I mean, he did it one right after the other. Not even like, you know how Joanna Jacek, when they ask her something, she's like, hey, so I was with Mikey Brown. And it's like she gets stuck on certain little words. She's trying to, like, you know, compute them and then spit them out. Paul was just like, you know, and then like, sí, mi amigo, if hizo un gol, estuvimos bien feliz. Yeah, bro, you know, it was best game of my life. I mean, he was just like, no problem, shifting gears. I was like amazed, man. That dude is a great soccer player. I'm glad we're kind of clicking with him, even though I was pissed pretty much all year. I've been on and off with that guy. But yeah, yesterday he saved us.
No, I never saw that, but that's hilarious. There are a couple mostly soccer players that are like that. There's some NBA guys, too, that can do that.
Have you ever heard Eric Bailly speak Spanish? He can do it, too.
No.
Yeah, he's from the Ivory Coast, a country in Africa, and obviously can speak English, but he can speak Spanish very, very well. Shout out to those guys.
So you brought up, when you were going over the results, Ike Villanueva. How does he not get a bonus? I mean, like, okay, he doesn't get a bonus, but if he goes back to the matchmaker, Dana, what if he were to say, what do I have to do to get a goddamn bonus? What would they respond? What more could he have done other than decapitate the guy? What more could he have done?
So let me give out the bonuses first, and then I'll answer the question. Mike Davis defeated Mason Jones. That was the fight of the night. Warley Alves defeated Umar Nurmagomedov. So Nurmi, I guess, I think when they have a chance to give out the submission, they will. It was a nice submission, you know. Warley Alves had a beautiful KO, and it happened really, really quick over a guy that was favored over him in Lizez. I am with you. A KO punch, you know, like Villanueva's, has to be rewarded. And there are times where you just don't reward the fight of the night and you give it to the – you give four performance bonuses. Or, again, how about five guys get 40 grand each? I don't know. I'm hoping they take care of him, goes, but he would have been one of my four for sure.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I just don't really understand bonuses all too well, what they end up doing. But, I mean,
yeah,
it's been like that, so.
My quick summary of the card was Nurmagomedov does look outstanding. Firo, the French lady, she really looks like she could be something else, man, if her game is right. I like what they did there. We had a run of decisions that kind of had me like, eh, because I was watching a little bit of the inauguration. Ricky Simon is a savage, no way around it. He continues to get better. It's too bad that he's lost a couple key fights. Otherwise, I think we would be talking about him kind of like we do with some of those other bantamweights. And Lerone Murphy still has a little bit of work to do. De Silva definitely pushed him. Akhmedov fought Breeze. I thought Breeze checked out. Matt Schnell really surprised me because he had been doing a series of interviews where he was like, I've been in a dark place. 2020 was a rough year. And, you know, sometimes Schnell gets hit and I don't want to say he's chinny, but he just doesn't take punches like somebody like he used to, like any guy or gal who's been hit a few times. But his chin held up, man, because Tyson Nam's one of the hardest hitters at flyweight, and his chin held up. And I'll tell you what, his hands continued to develop. He had this speed advantage that he put on display over Nam that I think frustrated Nam. He had a beautiful check left hook and a left hook that I think frightened off Tyson Nam as well. My hat is off to Matt Schnell. I bet on him a lot. This time, I don't know why I went against him, but congrats. I really like that kid. Viviana Araujo, you know, Roxanne Modafferi is not an easy out. Even when she loses, she gives you hell. But Araujo put it on her, man. Villanueva, like Go said, outstanding finish there. Warley Alves, same thing. Warley Alves is just one of those guys where if he doesn't get it done early, it's a coin flip as to what's going to happen in the next three rounds. But he did get it done early. And then Chiesa, very, very dominant. I still feel like he needs to address the cardio in rounds four and five. I feel like there is this drop-off against some of the fighters at the top, like Usman and Covington. I mean, you just can't do that. So he needs to continue to get better. And in fact, he called out Covington. Goes, he played the political card on a big political day.
Yeah, I thought it was smart. Anytime you see, that's the thing, man. Some of these fighters capitalize on that moment, that those 3-4 minutes that you get after a fight where the stage is completely yours. And the main event was already his, right? So this was his big moment. And I thought he did capitalize and doing that call out, because even if he doesn't get that particular fight, it just kind of keeps his name out there and relevant. And remember, there's going to be in this particular week, there was a card on Wednesday. So what normally happens is you have your card on Saturday over the weekend, and then maybe Monday and Tuesday, and then people forget and they start focusing on what's coming the following Saturday. And this particular event, we're already turning the page. We already got this big fight card on Saturday, and it's going to be one of the biggest ones of the year. So it's cool that Chiesa gave us a reason, not just to talk about what he did in the fight, but what he laid out for the future. It's just one more extra step. It's one more way to stay relevant. I like it. And I actually like the name. I like the call out. I think it would be a fun fight, and it'd be difficult because, you know, Colby's shown that he's pretty well-rounded. You know, he can take you down and he can grind you out, but he can also stand there and bang with you. And so if he does decide to do that, and Chiesa has also shown on his side that his striking has improved a little bit. So when I look at the matchup, I think that would actually be a lot of fun.
It would, and there's a little bit of a Pacific Northwest tie-in with Covington from Oregon and Maverick from the state of Washington. And I guess Maverick's playing the left demo card. He was basically saying, hey, the Trump era is over. Let's go, kid. I don't remember. I don't I don't remember seeing Chiesa too active in terms of that talk, but I guess if that's the angle he wants to push, fine. And it was, I guess, the right day to do it. However, I think Covington, once he got that win a few months ago, he's only looking upward. I think he would have entertained looking downward a little, but he got his one win that you need to get. The only thing that's hurting Covington at this point is there's a big rivalry match with Masvidal that everybody wants to see. That's one. You know, this is something that caused – I mean, these guys used to live together, and then they had a bitter falling out, and then it's to the point where one guy even left the gym. So that's along the lines of Dillashaw and Faber. So that has to be done at some point. But at the same time, Covington was very competitive with the champ. He won the first two rounds and lost in the fifth. So even though it didn't need to be run back right away, I think as long as he went out there and proved that he could, you know, take out another top contender, then he should be fighting for the title again. The problem is Burns and Usman have stretched out their fight since last July all the way till February. So by the time that fight's done, where do they stand? I suppose Covington could possibly get the winner. I'd love for Masvidal to be in that talk too, but Masvidal may need to get a win the same way Covington needs to get a win because Masvidal went the distance with Usman. He didn't get finished like Covington did. However, he didn't – I don't think he won a round against Usman, or he may have won one. I can't remember, but, you know, there's – both guys attacked the champ in different ways. So – we'll see. You know, they're both pretty big names. Masvidal is a very, very big name at the box office. I don't think the UFC puts him right back in coming off a title loss. You know what I mean? So we'll see. You got Edwards and Chimaev coming up as well. You got guys like Stephen Wonderboy Thompson out there who just beat Jeff Neal. You know, these traditional powerhouses that just don't stray away too far. So you got to keep an eye on them. And then your climbers. Vicente Luque, now Li Jingliang as well. You got to keep an eye on him. What an exciting division, though.
Yeah, I was just about to say, think about what you just said. Like, that sounds a lot like the 155 division. When you break them down versus 170, there's a lot of similarities in that, in those two divisions. And it's fun, really, really fun division.
Yeah. And so anybody that's saying, what, Chiesa? I didn't know. Yeah, I mean, we tried to tell you guys on Monday, and I think we even said it last week, it was going to be an early morning affair. But on Saturday, we're back to our normal pay-per-view time for the North American audience. 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific is the start of the main card of UFC 257. There'll be prelims that start a little bit early, roughly around 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific. That'll be on ESPN+. And then at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, they move over to ESPN. Goz and I'll probably dip in halfway there and probably be with you for the next seven fights, including the pay-per-view. It's our UFC 257 watch-along on Sportscaster. Sportscaster.com/MMAJunkie is our channel. Come hang out with us and watch the fights along with us. Whether you order it or not, we'll be there. There's a very, very cool chat room in there. You can interact with other hardcore fans. And again, if you're not ordering it, will be your eyes and ears. UFC 257 watch along, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific. I say that consistently because that's the start time of the pay-per-view, but more than likely we'll dip in at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. So join us and also tell a buddy so that we can continue to grow these watch alongs. The McGregor ones are massive.
I have two ideas I'm going to pitch you. One was given to me and the other one I came up with. The one that was given to me, what if we have a bottle of Proper 12, and I'm going to see if I can't order Dustin Poirier's hot sauce. You know how in Louisiana sometimes they'll put hot sauce in their drink, a little splash. If there is a knockout in the main event, they said we got to do a shot of Proper 12 with the hot sauce.
That's no problem at all.
All right, I'm in for that. And then I want to do a video on Friday. Last time we did the Gozapalooza drink. So this time we might do a new drink, but I want to do a video of how to prepare the drink so that everybody can buy all the ingredients and have that drink to drink along with us during the pay-per-view.
Okay. Well, let's see if we could do that. Are we going to do that live or when are we going to do that?
I'm just going to record it.
I was going to say, instead of waiting until Friday, maybe we could do it today. And that way people that show on like some sort of a archive, I guess, delay, that they'll have enough time before Saturday.
True. Yeah, okay.
Hey, Goz, real quick before we continue with the MMA, who do you like this weekend, the Bills or the Chiefs?
Man, it's a tough one because the Bills are kind of on a roll. They just need their offense to really come through. Their defense played great last week. The Chiefs are the Chiefs. When they get rolling, they're tough to beat. But with a quarterback that's a little banged up, I mean, even if he comes back and he plays, I still don't think he's going to be 100%. So I'm going to go with the upset. I'm going to go with the Bills in this one.
The Packers host the Bucks. Similar line. I think that one might be 3.5. The first one was 3. Now, in this one, neither quarterback has a concussion. Let's not forget, Mahomes is coming off concussion protocol. Who do you like here, Rodgers versus Brady?
I'm actually thinking – well, all year I've been saying that I think Green Bay is just going to have some sort of hiccup. And I think maybe this might be the week. I'm going to go with Tom Brady and the Bucks.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm not even going to ask you for Super Bowl because it won't matter if you get them wrong. And we got 2 weeks, but at least we know your picks here. You're going with Buffalo and Tampa. So you're going with both underdogs.
Mm-hmm. Well, I had said before the playoffs started that I felt like the Bills might be one of those teams. Like, you know, in college sports, this happens a little bit more than it does in the NFL, but they just seem to have that momentum going in where everything's clicking. But in that first game, they didn't really show that too much. They had a lot of problems, but that was my initial pick to go to the Super Bowl. So I guess if you want an early one, that's who I picked early. So that's who I guess I got to stick with.
I think that Green Bay is tough to beat because of it's a tough location to play to, you know. They played once before. I think Tampa whooped them earlier in the year in Tampa. I think Rodgers is playing as good as they come, honestly. And Brady is winning, but he hasn't played spectacularly either. So I'm going to give the advantage there. But if I'm going to get the 3.5, I'd probably take the Bucks. And usually when I take the favorite or the dog, I take the money line. But in this case, I think I'm just going to stick with Green Bay to win, a close one. And then in the other one, I think Mahomes' bigger problem goes might be the turf toe. So we'll see if he's out there in the first couple series and he's showing no residual from the concussion and obviously nothing from turf toe, then I just think KC's like at another level in against everyone in the NFL, honestly. That said, if Mahomes is off and the Bills can explode like they do, where they do score a ton of points, Bills will take that home. It all depends, I think, on Mahomes' health. So I think I'm going to stick with KC and Green Bay. However, Green Bay, I don't think can cover the 3.5. I think KC can cover the 3. But again, the first series or two will tell us about Mahomes. That toe is not going to be easy. If he can't run, that takes away a little bit of the threat of Mahomes. You know what I mean? And then as far as the concussion, like, I guess the first couple times he gets hit. I mean, if he goes out, look, Chad Henne looked good. Don't get me wrong. He got them to that game. But that's the death blow right there. You lose your starting quarterback.
But what if I make a rally stake? Would that change your opinion at all? That thing's like 17-2 or something like that, I think.
It's up there. Maybe, yeah, maybe. Maybe I'm going to throw out a joke and see if Chris laughs at my joke. Maybe that'll be the decider. All right. Let's talk about some of the latest news out there, and then we'll finish up with some UFC 257 talk. Fedor Emelianenko got COVID, goes hospitalized, though. That's the difference. There's a whole, like, hey, he's got, you know, they come out and say they got COVID or whatever. That's one thing. But then when you hear hospitalized, oh, man, I started doing one of these signs of the crosses. You know what I mean? There's a quote that says, I feel fine. I'm going into recovery. I'm grateful to the doctors and the medical staff for their care and hard work, but why was he hospitalized? I mean, is that some sort of a precaution or what? I've always heard along the way through this pandemic, you don't want to go to the hospital. When you go to the hospital, it's a whole other level of concern.
Yeah, that's the thing that's so annoying about this thing is everybody's reacting to it differently. You know, I just saw a good friend, Robbie LeBlanc, a friend of our show, he was talking about he's one of the small percentages of the ones that have these lasting effects, and that I think he's been free of it for a couple months now, and he still, his hands don't feel right. I mean, so with Fedor Emelianenko, it's like, okay, he was in the hospital, but he's feeling fine. He's coming out of it, but we don't know what kind of effect it can have on him. You know, maybe his lungs took a hit. We really just don't know, but it sucks because realistically, I think he was on the last fight, right? Didn't he say he had two? And I think he'd already been through one or two.
I don't remember. I know he's got it. We both know that he's got at least the one that Coker really wants to give him in Russia. But I'm under the impression that one's it. But I wouldn't be shocked if there's yet another one. Because I remember they said, Japan, we want to give him one in America, and we want to give him one in Russia. Wasn't that the original plan?
Yeah.
So it sounds like there's two left. We did Japan against Rampage. So now I guess we're waiting on America. The pandemic flipped everything upside down. So I don't even know if there's like a term when the contract ends. But we'll see. I think Russia won't be next.
Mike Bond caught up with Scott Coker a couple weeks ago. And he was saying, look, we waited this long that we might as well just wait and do it right. And what he meant by that was do it with fans and all that, at least for the last one. And the thing is, even though he said he had three left, you have to remember, let's just say he takes a vicious KO in the next one. It's not like he's going to say, yeah, but I got one left. Like, that might be it for him. So you're never really guaranteed those last three. So I think what Scott wants to do is give him a send-off with fans and all that. And, I mean, let's be honest. We are getting closer, right? You see some of these NFL games, they've got a little bit more people in the stands, some of these college games. So we're getting closer to that. Even the UFC had fans.
Correct. Okay. So McGregor, you know, outstanding fighter inside the octagon. He is tremendous on fight week. Just him arriving at a hotel is a big deal. But he also gets in a little bit of trouble outside of fighting, you know, in his personal life. In this instance, there was a lawsuit that was filed earlier this week. And it's in regards to allegations from a couple years ago. Some alleged sexual assault incidents. So he was asked about it because it was big news. It was big news on our website. I know that. And I believe I also saw it through the ESPN website as well. So it was getting pushed around. He was asked about it and he said, it's old news. That's his quote. It was investigated thoroughly over the course of two long years and I was cleared of any wrongdoing and that's it. Two things. One, he's right. He was cleared. He's been cleared, I believe, of every single sexual allegation that have been out there. Now, everybody can say there was a payoff, there was a this. We don't know. But that's just, you know, what you hear, especially when it comes to these high profiles. Like something behind the scenes may have happened. I don't know. But he was cleared, as far as I know, every single one that I've ever heard about. But this one, I believe, is different because it's like a civil lawsuit. And that was one. And two, I like that he took the question head on and kind of gave a little bit of closure to, that's what you're going to hear from me. It's an answer that addresses the question versus a no comment. And now we all move on. And I wish a lot of other fighters could learn from that.
Yeah, I was going to bring this up eventually on the show, but this just doesn't feel like a Conor McGregor fight weekend. And for obvious reasons, you know, like, There's not going to be the big contingent of Irishmen and women in Las Vegas where these fights usually happen, or New York. But even Conor himself just hasn't really been very wild. He's been more calm. You've seen him with his kid more. And believe it or not, when you break down fights, like a lot of Conor McGregor's demeanor goes into how you pick him in a fight. Even Dana White said it. Like, there's a certain Conor McGregor that shows up where when that guy shows up, he knows he means business. I don't know. I don't know exactly where Conor's head is at, but he does seem a little bit more mature this time around. And I did see that answer, and I thought it was the mature answer. I thought he kind of did it the right way.
So do I.
But I don't know how long that's going to last, or you know, hopefully it does stick. And I don't know what that says for his mindset for this fight. I don't know if he needs to be the brash guy. I don't know if he needs to get in fighters' faces. Like, even the stare down with Dustin Poirier, you know, we're usually you got Dana White like really close and people around because you don't know. Connor might shove you, he might do something to piss you off. And he said a couple words here and there, and Dustin responded, but it really, I don't know, it didn't have that feel. And I don't know if that's maybe going to come today or maybe even tomorrow, but I really do hope it comes around for Connor's sake, because I think that's his best weapon going into this fight, is getting inside Dustin Poirier's head. And he hasn't really tried to venture into that very much, other than making the prediction of it's going to be under a minute. And if I'm Dustin Poirier and I see Conor McGregor like that a little bit, I think it would give myself some confidence.
Well, the weight cut and the media can sometimes be the hardest part for a lot of fighters. A lot of fighters come in physically prepared, but the ones that kind of carry a little bit of this baggage, you know, from their personal lives, this could be the rough part, but I think he's overcome it. And now anything else that's put out there, he won't even read it. The focus will just be Poirier making weight and then getting out there and competing. And that's when Connor can just turn it on and be whatever he wants to be. But I think he got past the tougher part. I saw that. I thought, oof, that one's going to weigh on him, especially when I started watching the first couple embeds and I see the whole family's here, you know, and, you know, inevitably it's going to come up. It's going to come up to the organization as well. What do you do? Do you put out a statement first, which I think they have actually refuting it all earlier on. But eventually, you know, usually when you're not in a fight week, you're in a setting where you can control the media, whether you accept to do them or not. But when you're in a setting like that, like when they do those scrums with the reporters, inevitably it'll come up. And I think there's a lot of athletes are masterful in the way they handle that. And that comes a lot from media prep, from the organizations that you're with or whatever. It goes a long way. So that's done. And moving on here, Nate Diaz, next opponent. What do you know about that? This revelation, they think they know who. I could have sworn I saw someone. I hope they were joking, saying it could be Jake Paul, but I think that might have been Morgan just clowning around. But what have you heard about this mystery opponent? Did I miss something?
I think it's a joke. I don't think they really have one. I don't know what their thought. I think they probably have like a list of a couple people that they think it can be, but I don't know that the UFC necessarily has dialed it down to one, because you know what? I'll be honest, in like the last couple weeks, even if we go back to the spinning back click that you guys recorded this week, you guys brought up some good points where I was kind of like, hey, that kind of makes sense as well. So I don't think they really have anything going. I honestly think when they get through this Conor McGregor fight here, a lot of the other dominoes are going to start to fall into place. I really think that this is an important fight for the future of the company. Once that fight happens and we know where Conor McGregor is, I think all the other pieces will start to fall in a little bit as to who this possible opponent can be, what direction they want to go, title versus non-title, all that stuff will start to happen.
Yeah. Khabib is still kind of saying, well, I kind of said that, but I kind of still let everybody know that I'm retired. I guess they're going to meet in Vegas next week after this event. And we'll probably have an answer midweek. Probably by next Thursday show, we'll have an answer about the future of the 155-pound decision. It's still beyond me that this one isn't for the title, but whatever. I guess in the end, if they wind up talking Khabib into sticking around, then it all worked out. But to me, I don't see that, man. I see a guy that's sticking by his decision. And if there's anything that was going to lure him back, it would probably take a few years. I mean, GSP took over three years to get lured back when he fought Bisping. That was a long time. It may have even been four, man. I don't even remember. But from Hendricks to Bisping, it was a long, long time. For Khabib, I just felt like mourning the loss of your father / coach / mentor in this pandemic year, after what they went through in his hometown, his village, that looked to me like, hey, look, I fought Gaethje because that's what we were settling in on, interim versus undisputed. It was unified. Now I'm retiring, but let me sail off into the sunset, let the division move on. And then if I dip back, I get first dibs. And if not, then whatever. You know, I thought that was pretty clear to me, but here we are.
I'm looking at it like it's NASCAR, right? And everybody's in their car. But I feel like, and I might be a complete idiot, you guys may laugh at me, but I feel like the guy that's ahead of everyone right now, if he has a great performance, is Michael Chandler. Because I think if he wins that fight, and if he can even do it in like a destructive manner, if I'm Khabib and I'm watching that, I'm thinking, okay, here's what I could add to my legacy. A win over another, a former Bellator champion, right? He was the guy over at Bellator. He's an American, so you got USA versus Russia. There's something to that that can give that motivation that he's talking about. If you look at Dan Hooker and Dan Hooker gets a win, I don't know that Dan Hooker would motivate Khabib the way maybe Michael Chandler, a win over him, could do. If Conor gets a win, he's kind of got that been there, done that attitude when it comes to Conor. So I don't think he wants to do Conor any favors. So I really don't think Conor has any cards in any of this. And lastly, if Dustin wins, well, I mean, Khabib just beat Dustin. So I don't think that really motivates him as well. So really, I think the one guy that can drive to the finish line here on this card is Michael Chandler, in my opinion.
And, you know, I heard Chandler doing an interview and he brought up wrestling. He must listen to MMA Junkie because I was tipping him off. I thought that might be something where you can, you know, part of the storyline, USA versus Russia, American wrestling versus, I think he said, Russian Sambo, and then the fact that he was a champion in a formidable promotion. So you got the, you know, you're fighting an ex-champion, you know, that there's something to be said for that. The same way he took care of Justin Gaethje. So we'll see. We'll know soon. We're just outside of 48 hours of UFC 257. Do not forget about our watch along on Saturday here on Sportscaster, here on this channel, sportscaster.com/MMA Junkie, where you can catch all of our shows, not just this one that's live Mondays and Thursdays, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. All of our shows are here. They're archived. And if you're a podcast person who wants to listen to us before we started our stint with Sportscaster a couple years ago, we have over 3,000 shows in the bank. You can get at us at Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. Many of them in video form on YouTube, youtube.com/MMA Junkie Video. While I'm going through all this, I might as well tell you our social media on Instagram and Twitter. Goes is at the Goes, THEGOZE, and I'm at MMA Junkie George. Our radio show is at MMA Junkie Radio. All right, Goes, outside of this main event and co-main event, which we've discussed, let me tell you some fights that are happening, and I want to see which one's got your tail wagging. We got Calderwood versus I, Frivola versus Otman Azatar, and Marina Rodriguez versus Amanda Hibas. That's your main card. Those three, are they anything to you, you know, or do you feel like you're just socializing and having some deviled eggs and a drink and shaking hands and taking selfies, and then when they get to the come in event, everyone rushes to take their seat?
A little bit, because those are sort of fights that don't – I mean, I'm a big guy in storylines, and those don't really tell you anything. You know, the winner of Calderwood what does that do, right? It doesn't really do much. None of these fights – really propel somebody to that next step. We all know what they're trying to do with Amanda Hibas. And it's no disrespect to Amanda Hibas. She's a tough fighter, but she's kind of, if you look at what they try to do with Paige VanZant early on, you know, you could tell they're just trying to market her in a certain way and guide her in a certain direction, but she delivers. And I think she will continue to deliver. And so none of these fights really leave you with, what's going to happen next. There's no setup to it, right? Where the co-main event, well, that could actually possibly produce a challenger for Khabib the same way the main event could. You know, there's something on the line. There's Bellator versus UFC. So yeah, you're right. Maybe I'm schmoozing. Maybe I'm walking around with my martini, cracking little stupid jokes about Legoland and shit like that. But yeah, the last two, I'm glued.
Now, on the undercard, we got Brad Tavares versus Shoeface Antonio Carlos Jr. We also have Juliana Pena versus Sarah McMahon, Khalil Roundtree versus Marcin Prochino, and Arman Sarukyan versus Nasrat Haqparast. Arguably, to me, that foursome on ESPN is better than the threesome on the pay-per-view.
I like that there's like a little bit of heat between Tavares and Shoeface, in the sense that when we did that interview with Tavares and he mentioned, you know, he had heard that Shoeface was asking around, asking some training partners, you know, what's this guy like, that sort of thing. If I'm Shoeface, I take that. That's a little shot. You know, that's putting you out on blast. So you got Brad coming back from an injury. I like little storylines like that. So that alone makes me want to tune in. And you're right. But don't get me wrong. Like the fights on the main card underneath the co-main and the main event, they'll probably be like fun scraps. Like when you think about it, Joanne Calderwood and Jessica Eye will probably be fun to watch.
Yeah.
It's just not much is really going to come out of it.
What, going back to Hebus, what do you think the appeal is? She's a good looking gal. She's a great fighter. But I still think it comes down to her interviews. The only thing I'm baffled by is I love that she speaks English and I love that she perks up and answers, but I'm a little put off. I feel like they say, Amanda, let's talk about your fight. However, answer as if you were a witch. And I'm not saying she's old, one of them old dingy witches. She's a friendly witch, like Bewitched. She was a witch too, but she was pretty. So we're talking about a pre-witch, but like, you know, she has that little, that, is that just part of her quirky personality? Or do you think, do you think she talks like that even off air? Or do you think she just morphs into like this personality, I guess, once life.
She's like that all the time, I think. The one thing that trips me out about her is she does that lemon face a lot. Like, I don't know if you notice when she answers a question, she always goes like this. Or something like, she does this weird thing with her face. I don't know. But hey, she's a girl.
She's a hit, though.
Definitely. She's a girl that we used to hear about way long ago. Okay. Oh, my God. I just forgot his name.
Alex.
He used to always bring her up. Every time when he would be in studio, he usually gets there pretty early. He'd sit there for like 30 minutes and we just chit chat. And he would always bring up that name. Because she's going to be a star. She's going to be a star. And finally, all that's starting to come to fruition. She's a good fighter. And she does give a good interview. She's very charming. She's just fun. But I think just the agenda with the UFC is so obvious that until you get a real, real tough challenger in front of her, I think you just kind of throw that one in at the end of your parlay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think she just reminds me a little bit of like Paul Bearer. Paul Bearer in the backstage, it's probably like, you want a Miller Lite or a Bud Light? Give me a Bud Light, bro. Okay, Paul, you're about to do that interview. Hey, where's the Undertaker? You know, and all of a sudden he kind of goes into this character. And I don't know if Amanda like is some sort of a character. Maybe there's someone in Brazil like I haven't heard of. And, you know, or all this is from a movie, or she's just, or if that's just her. I don't know.
I think it's just her. I think she likes to have fun. I think she likes to do that. You look at like her social media and stuff, she's like that in those videos too.
All right, fair enough. Well, listen, as far as the news goes, I gave it one more refresh. Did you see Karen Till's appearance on Twitter?
Karen Till?
Darren Till has morphed into Karen Till, yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think of Karen Till? Darren Till has a lot of potential to be in this sport for a long time and be kind of like a Chael Sonnen, except like edgy. I think Chael was more like an old school assassin for a Italian mob crime family, right? Where he just got the job done. You don't want to mess with him, this, that, whatever. I feel like Darren could be a hitman, an assassin as well. But he wouldn't be as like methodical and secretive. I think he'd be a little bit more out there. He's almost like man, what's that dude's name? John
Wick.
No, it's Juliet's favorite actor. The guy that also has a sister that acts, and they're in a lot of movies together. Not Stamos. John.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
Remember, he goes back to. His high school reunion, it turns out he's a killer.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. The Ghetto Blaster guy.
Ghetto Blaster?
Cusack.
Yeah, remember he was kind of like a sloppy assassin in his movie Point Break, right? No.
Point Blank, I think.
Point Blank? Yeah, that one. Whatever it was called. So it's a pretty good movie with a great, great 80s soundtrack. And then you have your hitmen where, like, you don't even know their identity and they don't communicate with anyone. It's just a secret code. And once you send them in motion, you can't stop them. That's Chael with his smack talk. I feel like Darren Till, who lately has been Karen Till, just has a blast on social media. He may blast you. He may not. He may goof on you in an interview. He may not. He's a badass fighter. Like, I really, really have fun with that guy.
He's English Masvidal, in my opinion. I'm laughing at the chat right now because I think Hal from Chicago is probably losing his mind. It just says, Cusick, Joan Cusick, John Cusick, Gross Point Blank. Excellent movie. I'm dying reading this.
You seen the movie?
I haven't, no.
Really?
Gross Point Blank?
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
Check it out, man. Ari, that's Jeremy Piven. He's in it as well. And so is the girl with the white face from
Pulp Fiction?
The first movie that Matt Damon made with Ben Affleck. Were you super smart?
Yeah, do you like apples, all that? What?
That one. That one. That one's called, I almost said Green Street Hooligan. What the fuck is it? I can't remember what it's called. See, once my mind's set on MMA, I may stray outside and I can nail down sports pretty good, but once we shift to pop culture, that movie was called...
I was going to say A Beautiful Mind, but that's Russell Crowe, right?
Yeah, his name is Matt Damon, and he is...
somebody in the chat, help us out.
Yeah, somebody in the chat's got to help us out. That's the first. They got an actual Oscar for that movie. They wrote the Oscar, Matt Damon and Ben Affleck.
Good Will Hunting. Thank you, Kelly.
That, in fact... What I like about these finds, even though it takes us forever and we need our consigliaries to help us, there's a lot of people that probably haven't seen that movie. And that's a gem, man. That really is it. That one holds up, especially because Damon and Affleck are still stars. So now if you can catch them early on along with Cole Hauser and the late Robin Williams, you got yourself a movie. You know what I mean? By the way, has Ada Hanoun seen Hoosiers or not?
Not that I know of. I haven't talked to her in a while.
If she would have just told me last July, George, I'm not going to watch it, and can you hear this? Well, good. Let me turn it up. And just told me that, I would have been, all right, fair. I tried, and that's that. But Farah, who loves basketball, absolutely loves basketball, and we got the whole Lakers connection. We're both junkies now. She's fist bumping. Yeah, GG, I'm going to get to it, blah, blah, blah. She's giving me these promises that she's going to watch them. And I've still yet to hear that she's going to watch them. And the worst thing about it is she is a basketball junkie. She's going to love the film.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the deal is. I mean, she might have watched it. She said she was going to watch it over Christmas break. But I haven't talked to her since, so I don't know.
Hmm. Well, I told her it's so good that she's going to actually write me, not only to thank me, but to apologize for not taking me serious because she can't believe she missed out on such a good movie. And I would put Good Will Hunting up there as well in regards to, if you just like a good movie from the mid-90s, go check out Good Will Hunting.
What's her Twitter handle? At Farah Hanoun?
Possibly.
If you guys, I think you guys should hit her up on Twitter and say, what are you thinking? Watch Hoosiers. Get to it already. Gigi's losing his mind. Something. But tweet her because obviously she's not listening to us.
No, she keeps like saying, I'm going to do it. But yeah, she isn't. And by the way, she's doing a great job out in Abu Dhabi. She's caught up with Dana White a few times. She caught up with Conor McGregor. In fact, in the middle of her interview with Conor McGregor, Max Holloway apparently rode by with a skateboard. That little silly segment of 20 seconds that McGregor got distracted and they both giggled and apparently Holloway was on his way, that's gotten like 18,000 shares on Junkie. So just goes to show you, you know, Stephen Morocco probably took 7 years for that story about to do Spencer Fisher. And I don't know that he got the traffic that he deserves because that was a great story, by the way, as Max Holloway riding by on a skateboard. So to try and figure out journalism nowadays is pretty baffling. Fada on Twitter, I got it right here, is at Fada_Hanoun. And yes, folks, hit her up. Because this is what we're at, a crisis here. The fact that she hasn't seen the movie, who she can't call herself a hoopster and also just blow off that movie. You just can't.
Man, Hal's saying that that movie's just lost its luster.
Hoosiers?
Yeah.
Hell no, because it's got a beautiful soundtrack. I don't want to give away the ending or anything, but it's just it doesn't age. The movie doesn't age, because even when I watched it in the late 80s, it was already a movie based in the 50s. So I had every right to go, this was 36 years ago. What do I care? I still care, because I was a hoopster growing up, and I just loved it because there was so many unexpected twists and turns. We got two solid actors to start with in Dennis Hopper and Gene Hackman, and then a few others that you'll see that you'll recognize from other movies that have done, you know, other movies. I don't remember their names off the top of my head, but the soundtrack is money. Just like the Rocky soundtrack, you know, when Junior DeSantos walks out, dun 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 dun, 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 dun. Same thing, man. Hoosiers, you hear those Hoosiers tunes? They're awesome, bro.
Nah, I'm with you. That's one of my top 10 favorite movies of all time. I love that movie.
Yeah. At Farah _ Hanoon. Please hit her up, Junkie Nation. I'll spell it out. FARAH_ HANNOUN. She's got to watch it. All right, folks. We'll close with this. A reminder for Saturday's UFC 257 watch along here on Sportscaster, sportscaster.com/MMA Junkie. Goz and I will be hosting a UFC 257 watch-along. So basically, if you order the pay-per-view, you're more than welcome to watch along with us. You can turn down the volume on your TV and listen to us. You can turn down the volume on us, listen to TV, and chat with us here on the chat room. And if you don't order the pay-per-view, then even better, because we'll be your eyes and ears. We'll tell you exactly what's going on. Make your favorite food and dish. Have your favorite food and drinks ready to go, because we'll be toasting along with you. Have some parlays ready. Share them with us. We'll be betting them as well. It's going to be a fun time. 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific on Saturday, January 23rd. That's what we're putting out publicly, but knowing us, we'll probably dip in at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, 1 hour early so we can catch the last couple prelims with you. And then the five-fight main card for UFC 257, which includes Michael Chandler versus Dan Hooker in the co-main event and Conor McGregor versus Dustin Poirier in the main event. If you see us tweeting or sharing it on Facebook, please give it a retweet and a share. We would love you for it. We're going to see how many people we can get in here on Saturday and have a blast with you. All right, folks, we are out of here. Have a great week. And, you know, don't forget Saturday's historical card. Keep it locked on MMA Junkie here as we have three people from the MMA Junkie team out at Yas Island covering the event, not just Farah Hanoun, but also Mike Bond and John Morgan. And we have tons of content here on MMA Junkie. So keep it locked here. Don't forget, we also have a free app for all mobile phones, all smartphones and tablets. It's the MMA Junkie app. Everything you can get on the website, you can get on the app, including streaming the radio show. So check it out. It's free. Download it. And folks, we're out of here. Have a nice weekend. See you Saturday. Go out there and be a champion.